All right, guys, I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8. We're in Mark chapter 8. We're going to look at verses 14 through 26. Now, we're going to wrap up today this first section of the Gospel of Mark. The Gospel of Mark is divided into two parts. One is the whole issue of getting to know Jesus, and that's what we've been doing for the last few months as we've been going through the Gospel of Mark. Then when we get to the latter part of chapter 8 through chapter 16, we're going to see the road to the cross, where all of a sudden he reveals what's supposed to happen. And of course, we're going to see the reactions to that. So we've been trying to get to know Jesus, trying to understand him, trying to really grasp who he is. Now, here's the problem. In spite of everything we've seen, and let's be honest, we've seen a lot. We've seen someone who is a great teacher. We've seen someone who helps everyone of all of their problems, all of their issues. And there's no issue that Jesus can't deal with. For instance, he can heal the blind. He can heal the deaf mute. He casts out demons. He raises the dead. He causes a man who has a hand who is atrophied. So I want you to think about that, what that means. An atrophied hand is a hand that is withered because of something muscular that's taken place. I remember years ago when we pastored in our first church in Canada, we had a lovely couple there, and his name was Pearly. And Pearly, when he was 18 years old, got polio. And half of his body was atrophied because of the polio. Now, that didn't keep him from doing things. He drove bulldozer until he retired. In fact, he would say to me, "I helped build a Toronto airport." You know, and he drove one of those big things. And so here's the guy, he's got an atrophied hand. Jesus speaks the word, and it becomes perfect. That's who he is. Now, he's also feeding 5,000, 4,000, walks on water, calms seas with the word. And wouldn't you say that's something spectacular about him? Wouldn't you say that's something amazing? And we're just reading it. We're not witnessing it. But then the gospel's been very clear all along up until this point, and we're going to see it again today, that they don't understand. They're not cluing in. I mean, it's like when that stuff happens, it's like, oh, it's just another day, right? No, it isn't another. This is spectacular. Who is this guy? Who could do this? It's Jesus. But they're still not getting it. Now, we could be harsh with them. Let's just be honest. We could say, oh, come on, guys. Surely you can see a whole lot more there. I'm seeing a lot more there, and I'm looking at this. No, I think if you stop for a moment, if you think about it, we're exactly like them. What do you mean? We're exactly like the disciples. We're exactly like the people who are following after him. We're exactly like the Pharisees. We see all of this stuff he's doing, but it hasn't really taken root in our own lives and in our own hearts. And we're going to see him talk about that today. And he's going to ask a question. Don't you understand? I mean, that's a powerful question, right? I mean, that's what he's asking you and I today. Don't you understand? Don't you understand who he is? And the implications of that? So I want you to notice with me, we're going to look at this passage together. Here's what he writes in verse 14. Now they had forgotten to bring bread, and they had only one loaf with them in the boat. And he cautioned him, saying, "Watch out, beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." And they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember when I broke five loaves for 5,000, how many basketfuls of broken pieces did they take up? They said to him, 12. And the seven for 4,000, how many basketfuls of broken pieces did you take up? And they said to him, 7. And he said to them, do you not yet understand? Wow, what a question. And they're worried about bread. Look at verse 22. And they came to Bethesda, and some of the people brought him a blind man and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And then he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him. And he said to him, do you see anything? And he looked up and said, I see people, but they look like trees walking. Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. And he sent him to his home, saying, Do not even enter the village. Okay, folks, let's take a look at it. We're going to divide it into four sections, okay? We're going to take a look and see what caused this conversation. So we're going to see a warning. Now, we got to pay attention to the warning because Jesus obviously gave that for them to learn something. But with the warning, there's a misunderstanding. They're like totally missing what Jesus is saying because they're focused on something else, and it's because they're misunderstanding. And then what we're going to see is Jesus tells them to remember. Which, by the way, as I think about the New Testament, a lot of times we're told to remember. Remember things we should already know. And then it's going to end with Jesus again. So let's take a look at this. So first of all, the warning. Look with me at verse 14 and 15. Here's what he says. Now when they had forgotten to bring bread. So, okay, he's laying the stage work here. He's saying they forgot to bring bread. They only had one loaf in the whole boat. Okay, so when you think of a loaf, I don't want you to think about Sunbeam or Wonder Bread that you're buying at your local grocery store. Okay, when we talk about a loaf of their bread, we're talking something very small, probably rye or barley bread, and it's pretty insignificant. That's what they have with them. But Jesus isn't focusing on bread here, so look with me at what he says in verse 15. He says, and he cautioned them, saying, watch out because of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. So he's wanting them to be aware of leaven. Now, leaven, to be very honest with you, was not a part of the Jewish diet. Leaven is something we would know today is yeast. One of the things I love about my wife is we make bread in our house. And we make pizza dough, and we always have to have yeast to make sure things rise, right? Well, that is leaven. That's a no-no for them. And he's saying, be careful of the leaven. And you guys understand what yeast does. You put a little bit in, and it spreads through the whole what? The whole lump. It corrupts. Well, they would say it corrupts the flour. We say, at least I would say, it really brings out the taste. You know what I'm saying? It's great. But he's going to warn them about two things here that I think are very important for you and I to pay attention. Two things. He's trying to warn them because it's in the scripture when we talk about, for instance, Paul will in two different occasions in Galatians chapter 5, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, will say a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And it's always with reference to sin affecting you spiritually. So here's what he's warning against. He warns two things here. He warns against the leaven of the Pharisees. Now, what in the world is he talking about there? Well, think about the Pharisees for a moment. They're religious Jews, and their focus is completely on ritual. So he warns against ritual, a religious ritual. Another word for it would be, if you've come from some certain churches, legalism. Do you understand that? He warns you against getting so wrapped up and just your spiritual exercises, that the exercises take precedent over who? Jesus. And so for years, it's really easy to fall into that trap. So for instance, and it can happen to anybody. You can say, what do you mean, George? We're not legalistic here at our church. Yeah, but you can be legalistic. So for instance, let me give you an example. Maybe you start out each day having your devotions. You start out each day reading a certain number of verses. Maybe you want to read through the Bible and you're like reading a chapter, something in the Old Testament, New Testament, a Psalm, and a Proverbs each day. Well, you guys know what weeks are like. You know what things are happening. You know that sometimes things blow up, don't they? Your week blows up and your schedule blows up. And then all of a sudden, can you have that devotion in the morning like you used to do? No. In fact, you might be shocked that whatever blew up in your life may cause you not to want to have devotions for what? 3 or 4 days, because you're trying to put out whatever fire is going on in your life at that point. And here's what happened. By the fifth day, when you're trying to get back to normal and you start getting back into, oh, I better get back into my routine, something enters into your mind. God, you're not happy with me. God, I've displeased you. God, I didn't do what I was supposed to do. What didn't you do? You didn't have your devotions. So let me just stop for a moment. Whether or not you, first of all, I encourage you to have your devotions. That's part of the relationship. But God's not sitting around with a brownie point chart. Oh, check off. They did their devotions today. Check it off. They spent time in prayer. Check it off. He's not sitting around checking things off. He loves you. Do you understand what I'm saying? He cares for you. And nothing's going to change that relationship. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, for instance, Lori and I were excited yesterday because my son and his wife needed to go down to Pittsburgh to do some shopping. So we volunteered to watch Thaddeus, my grandson Thaddeus. He's actually 10 months today. 10 months today, okay? So we got to watch him yesterday. We had such a wonderful time with him. We had such a great time. And it was so great till mom and dad came home. And he went immediately to them, and he couldn't care less about grandpa anymore. Now, did I change my attitude towards him? If I did, please send me somewhere. I need to be checked out, okay? But the reality is, no, I'm not. I'm just telling you, I still love him, even if he has his parents' heart first. Do you understand what I'm saying? I still love him. I'm still going to volunteer. We're already volunteered again in September. He's going to stay overnight with us. Wow. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm telling you, God's the same way. But what is that legalism? Where you make some ritual, something that you do, some practice, almost as important that you think that God doesn't accept you anymore because you got knocked out of whack from your issue? That's the first warning. Here's the second warning. Most people blow over this, but I think we need to look at it again. The other one is that he warns them against the influence of politics. He talks about the leaven of Herod. Now, who's Herod, George? Herod is King Herod, which, by the way, if you read earlier in Mark, he's not a righteous dude. In fact, what we see is he's having a party, he's having an orgy, and they're doing all kinds of wild, crazy dances there. That's who Herod is, but Herod's the king. He's the political power. And what he's warning his disciples is, you got to be warned of religious ritual, but then he also takes one other aspect of their society. You got to be warned of politics, political power. Why? Because it can suddenly creep in and take over. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? I mean, I think every one of us here, no matter where you're at politically, we've met some people that have become so consumed. You're sitting there saying, hey, I'm ready for the Steeler season. And they're like, hey, do you hear what's going on in the Senate? I'm talking about the Steeler. What has that got to do? If they don't get this done, what's going on? That person has become so enamored with, and if it's a Christian, I'm going to be honest with you, it permeates into their life. And that's not good. So that's the warning, okay? Just the warning. He doesn't expand upon it, but it's something for us to pay attention to. But here's the misunderstanding. He's trying, are you ready? Everything he was doing is to try to prepare his disciples. And they're just not getting it. They're totally misunderstanding. What do you mean? Look with me at verse 16 and 17. Look at what he says here. He says, and they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. He's talking about influences in their life, being aware of the influences that may cause them harm to their spirituality, and they're totally missing that, flies over their head. It's because we didn't bring any bread. All we have is one little loaf. They're not getting it. And look at what he says. Look at what verse 17 says. Jesus says, and Jesus, aware of them, says, why are you discussing the fact that you do not have bread? Why are you spending your time doing this? Why would he even say that? Well, because he's been with them so long. If they got a bread issue, do you think the problem could be solved? Should. I mean, he just fed 5,000 on one instance, 4,000 on another instance. You know what I'm saying? Think about this. One of the other Gospels talks about Peter, go cast a line when he was asked about a temple tax. Go cast a line, you're going to bring a fish in, and it's going to be a coin in his mouth. That's Jesus. Jesus, we've been fishing all day. There's no fish here. Cast your line over on that side. What does he bring in? A haul bigger than they've ever brought in before. Do you think Jesus can provide? But they're not understanding. They're missing the point. So here's the two things I want you to see here. Number one, they missed the obvious meaning. What is the obvious meaning? He's talking about influences that can hinder you spiritually. They missed it. They're arguing among yourselves. It's because you didn't bring that, Thaddeus. You didn't bring the bread when you were supposed to. I would have, but if it wasn't for Matthew and getting in the way, we could have had a lot of bread here. No, he's like, come on. They're missing the obvious meaning here. Can I ask you a question? How many things are you missing? What do you mean, George? I know for a fact, because I see it in my own life, God works in each and every one of us daily. He is showing us things. He's telling us things. You read his word. He speaks to you through his word. He directs you, he guides you, and there are things there, and sometimes it can be so obvious, but we miss it because we're distracted by something else. We're distracted by what we want to achieve in this world. We were distracted by whatever crisis we're in right now. We're distracted, and we're missing what God is saying to us. We're missing it. Let me tell you, there's been times when I've missed it and I've gone back to him and I've had to confess to him, Lord, I am so sorry, I'm just thick in the head. But you're so patient with me. Here's the next thing I want you to see there. They struggled to understand due to the hardness of their own hearts. You want to know why sometimes we don't see it when it's so obvious what God might be doing in our life, what he might be showing us in his word? Some of it is, to be honest with you, the hardness of our own hearts. Our hearts might be hardened towards him. That's what he's saying to them. You guys, you're not perceiving because of your own hardness. You're self-absorbed. Wow. Isn't that true for all of us? We're pretty self-absorbed, right? Yeah, I can almost guarantee you that when I come in conflict with family members or something, a lot of times it's because I'm self-absorbed rather than thinking outside of myself. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because that's natural human behavior. And so the reality is he's saying, guys, you just don't see it. So did Jesus tries to get them to see it, and this is where we need to spend some time. He's going to tell them what they need to do, and here's the one word it is. Remember. Remember. I like the way Revelation puts it in Revelation chapter 2 in the letters to the seven churches, Jesus communicating to the church at Ephesus. He says, I got one thing against you. You've forgotten your first love. You've forgotten that relationship with me. The very first thing he tells them, besides repent, is remember from where you have fallen. Think back. Remember. Now, what are they supposed to remember? They're supposed to remember him. And that's exactly what he does here. He's going to say, he says, think about what God has already accomplished. Think about it. Think about what God has already done in your life. Sometimes you don't have to spend too much time. Sometimes you just need to look back and see the things that he does that are just amazing, and it's God. So I can think back, this has probably been, 2009. I'm on a board of an international mission, and they had a board meeting in Palm Springs, California. So they were going to fly me from Pittsburgh to Palm Springs. Never been there, never been to California before. So I'm at the airport, and it happens to be, are you ready for this? It happens to be February in Pittsburgh. So guess what we have in Pittsburgh in February? Snow, right? Okay. Snow's like the enemy of airplanes. What do you mean, George? Well, as soon as you get in your plane, we're going to get out of here on time. Everything's going to be great. And then the pilot comes on. We're seventh in line for the de-icing. Oh. How long's that going to take? Well, so you get de-iced and then we're up. Now, you don't fly directly to Palm Springs from, at least with U.S. Air at that time, you don't fly directly there. You have to go to a hub. And so the hub was Phoenix, Arizona. So we had to fly to Phoenix, Arizona. Okay? And we get to Phoenix, Arizona, and my plane that I'm supposed to connect with is supposed to leave in 5 minutes after the time that I land. And it's the only flight from Phoenix to Palm Springs. So I'm panicking. I'm on the plane. I've had a new prayer life that day. Lord, I got to get through this. And so I get off the plane, and I was a lot thinner then, and I was running from one gate to another whole wing of gates trying to get there. And I get there, and the plane hadn't taken off yet. And then I see a guy who's on the board with me. He and I were roommates in seminary together. And I said, hi, John. He said, the plane isn't taking off yet. I said, wow, I thought I missed it. He said, boy, you're lucky. What? He said, they evacuated the entire airport. And then everybody had to go through security again. And that delayed all the flights. So you got here just in time. What I didn't know was, is somebody crashed a plane somewhere in Texas, and that affected the TSA or whatever for Phoenix Airport. And I'm like, God, you're in control. God, you took care of me getting there, even with the de-icing. And I'm sorry some guy crashed a plane, but thank you, God, I got on my flight. These are the things. Think about what he's already done. Now, that's a crazy illustration, but there's been many more crazy illustrations about what he's got. I'm thinking that in your life, if you're walking with him, he's done some crazy things with you, right? He's answered some prayer. He's shown up at the right moment. He's done the right thing. He brought you through something. He's shown himself real in your life, right? Even if it was just simply you were praying about something and he gave you peace and you thought, oh, Lord, you're right here with me. He's saying to him, think about what I've already done with you. He's saying, guys, you're worried about bread. Didn't we just feed 5,000? And how many loaves was that? Didn't we just feed 4,000? How many baskets of leftovers was there? So he's saying, think about what you're doing. Think about it. So here's the question. Why can't you see it? That's what he says here. When you look at verse 21, I mean, it's pretty interesting the way he says it. Do you not yet understand? Why can't you see it? I mean, to be honest with you, if we left here with no other question, why can't you see in your own life that Jesus is alive, that God is real, that he died for you so that you would have forgiveness, not just forgiveness, but you would have the penalty of your sin removed from you so that you don't have to suffer later? Why can't you see that? Why can't you see that this Jesus, through the person of the Holy Spirit, who he sent to us, well, because he's going away, is with you every day, guiding you and directing you? He's even helping you when you don't even know how to pray about something. You ever been in that kind of situation where you know you got to pray about something? It's so you don't even know how to pray, but God is directing you and guiding you in how you pray? Why can't you see that? Why can't you see the very real God in your life? And so here's what Mark does. He moves from that question to one more incident. One more thing that Jesus does, and again, it's another healing. It's another guy who is blind, and it's obvious that he wasn't born blind because he obviously has seen men before, but he must have gone blind. And he comes to Bethesda, and there's this blind guy, and the villagers are bringing this blind guy to him saying, heal him. And of course, what does the passage tell us? That Jesus takes him outside of the village, which, if you notice, he's been doing that a lot lately. He doesn't do it with the crowd. He takes them outside. And there's a couple things here that he's wanting to show them. And here's what I want you to see, is that Jesus can do anything. He can do anything. And have you noticed that when he does something, it's always different each time? In this instance, I'm kind of grossed out by it, but he's spitting in some guy's eye. I mean, that, you know, that's kind of different, but he's doing it here. And then he asks the guy, what do you see? And the guy says, well, I see men walking like trees. So obviously he's seen men before, but his sight is not completely healed yet. So what? Jesus again touches him, and he has complete eyesight then. But he could do anything. And then, like before, this is the third time it's obvious that he's telling them. What does he tell the guy? Don't tell anybody. You go straight home. Go straight home. Why? Here's the thing. Let the facts speak for themselves concerning the Lord's work. Let the facts concerning the Lord's work speak for themselves. And they're going to, right? Because everybody in the area is going to know what? This guy was blind. Isn't that amazing? Jesus isn't into the aggrandizement thing. Jesus isn't posting on Twitter. Jesus isn't posting on Facebook. Look at me, I'm having a perfect life. Have you noticed we've all quit looking at Twitter, at Facebook because we've gotten sick of that? Because nobody's life's that perfect? Well, Jesus doesn't do that kind of thing, right? He's not interested in bringing glory to himself. He just does what he's supposed to do because he's got a higher purpose. So my question is, okay, let's go back. This is what, don't you understand? This Jesus who could do anything, who's saying, let me just do what I'm doing in your life and let it speak for itself. He's the one who wants to interact with you. He's the one who wants to work in your life. But we're worried about bread. We're worried about stuff that really doesn't matter. Isn't that interesting? And the stuff that doesn't matter is going to be different for each one of us, isn't it? It's going to be different. I was thinking about that. I'll close with this. I was 39. My brother was 38. And this was the fall of 2005. My brother was an investigator with Richland County Sheriff's Department in Columbia, South Carolina. He's a cop. Big guy, 2 inches taller than me, whole lot thinner, whole lot mean and uglier, and a flat top haircut. That was my brother, my younger brother. We're 11 and a half months apart. When we grew up, our mom dressed us alike so everybody thought we were twins. Why did they do that back then? But they did. I was at the house and I got a phone call. And I was getting ready to go to a football game at Kerwinsville. And I got the call that my brother at 38 had a heart attack and died. And I'm shocked. I grabbed, I think I had Foster and Maddie, and we went to the football game. But I left the football game. I'm like, what am I doing here? We got up the next day and drove down to South Carolina for his police funeral, which was huge. And but I'm going to tell you something. I had just talked to my brother a few weeks before. He had no plans at 38 to die. He was talking to me about what he was doing at work and what he wanted to accomplish and this, that, and another. He had plans. He had dreams. He had things he wanted to do. He's telling me about this with his family and all of that. Nowhere in his mind did it ever enter him that he was going to be gone. No, nothing, nowhere. In fact, you wouldn't even have that enter into your mind. He, though, turned out he had a complete blockage of one of his arteries. They called it a widowmaker. They had to have an autopsy because he was an investigator, so the sheriff wanted to be sure he just died of natural causes, nothing weird. And so we found that out, and he had no chance. But then he had the lifestyle, right? Smoking, eating junk food all day, and it killed him. See, this is the thing. Life's short for us, right? We're not in control. But while you're here, He's with you. Why can't you see it? Why can't you see him wanting to interact in your life? Let me pray for you.